just keep fighting, don't give up. Because the moment that you give up and you think, hey, this is not for me, that's the moment you could be coming through your breakthrough. Just continue to work, be a sponge, learn as much as you can, and be a Swiss Army knife.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches podcast, we're joined by LaShonda Cousin, Associate Head Coach and Recruiting Coordinator at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte. Coach Cousin began her career in AAU basketball before moving into the college ranks with stops at Jackson State and Charlotte, working her way up through multiple roles on staff. Along the way, she's earned recognition for her impact as an assistant and her ability to recruit and develop players. In this episode, we discuss her transition from GA to assistant and what helped her earn high-level recognition, ways coaching staffs can better engage the community and build fan support, and the toughest challenges of recruiting in today's landscape.
Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get free shipping on your purchase of a brand new Dr. Dish.
What's going on, coaches, everyone? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Your favorite voices to always listen to, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Alongside us today, we're fortunate we have the Associate Head Coach and Recruiting Coordinator over at the University of North Carolina, Charlotte, UNC Charlotte, Coach LaShonda Cousin. Coach Cousin, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome. Glad you could jump on. We appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
You got it.
I know you have some great things to share. One, I know you have some great experiences as a young head coach, or excuse me, young assistant coach and associate head coach throughout your career so far. Soon to hopefully be head coach, we'll say that. In the future, we'll put it into the air. But some things to, one, necessarily point out. I know Mage was happy about this one as we were talking. This is back home for him, right? UNC Charlotte. So this is some familiar ground. Man, I can't speak today, apparently. But we're excited to be able to get you on here. And the first thing we want to really do is just you and your career, starting out as a GA, trying to break into coaching. What did you feel like you had to do better to earn your place, to earn your opportunity to really move up the ranks? What were some things that really you tried to stand out?
I really just wanted to come in and work. Coming in as a GA, I went through a phase where my undergrad degree was actually in criminology. So I started off, I was at Mississippi State. A lot of people don't know, so I played junior college basketball. And at the end of my sophomore season, found out I was pregnant with my son. So I took an academic route and just wanted to get into my career. I wanted to be a criminal profiler. And so I started coaching at U in Mississippi with my dad and my guy dad's team. And 2 months before I'm about to graduate from Mississippi State, I'm like, man, I think I want to be a coach. I think this is something I want to do. And fortunately, I just went ahead and applied to different master programs and universities, and then just got the call from Coach Reed to just stay home, come back home, and just be the grad assistant. So my thought process just coming in was to just work and learn as much as possible, right? Because I knew who Coach Reed was, her track record. And I'm like, man, I'm about to be learning from a really great coach. And I was just blessed to come in with a great group of coaches. You guys may have heard of a few. Walter Pitts, he's down at UCF right now on the women's side. And Daryl Hudson, he's at Dayton. And then Richard Bradley, who's not into coaching right now, he is a really big business owner in the state of Mississippi and in the city of Jackson. And they just took me under their wings. Any question I had, they were right there with me along the journey. So just working and learning and just being a sponge. And I was able to take some really good things from each one of those guys.
Yeah, I always like to ask people, like, if there was a moment, and I don't mean like angels singing from the heavens and the skies opening up, but we all have that little moment where we realize, like, all right, I think I can either do this or I think this is really what I want to do. It sounds like maybe in that period of coaching AAU ball, you know, that's when it hit you. But was there a particular moment when it hit you? Or because sometimes if it is a moment, you never forget it. And I'm always curious if there was a moment where you saw a kid get it or you saw the team click, or what was it that really put you over the edge and gave you the bug?
Yeah, I think that last season dealing with the AAU program, we had a really great team, top 100 kids in our program. And we had a rough patch, and just to see us get over that hump and the guy that I was helping with at the time, he would let me draw plays, be it just involved with practice and things like that. And I can remember just asking Coach Amber Clay, like, Coach, I think I want to be a coach. And she just let me know, hey, make sure it's something you want to do that you're not going to get paid for. You're going to be putting more money into the program, into the kids, than you'll be receiving. And I just thought about it. And I was like, if it's something that I have to do that doesn't equivalent with money, it will probably be coaching, because I have a son, an infant, and I would trade working and making money to coach basketball. So I'm like, man, this is something that I really love. So I believe going into that summer, it was just like, man, this is something I want to do. And when I realized that, I talked to my advisor at Mississippi State, because she wanted me to come do research for her. She was about to get a grant and she was looking at potential students. She was like, I really think you should go to grad school. And I was like, I think I really want to be a coach. And I was like, so we looked at just different opportunities for me to do both. And thankfully, everything just aligned. I have reached out to different programs, and a lot of people don't know, graduate assistant spots don't always have financial compensations. So I had some people that remembered who I was, and they were like, yeah, we'd love to have you, but I couldn't uproot my son if it didn't make sense. So thankfully, Jackson State was open, and I'm from Jackson, so I was able to have my support system with me during the tough times of just stepping into this career.
Yeah, and a few babysitters on hand from time to time.
Yeah.
Now, more power to you to be able to do that. Like you said, some GA positions don't financially back you. And I was fortunate, my first GA position, I felt like, I should say my only GA position, I was fortunate, I felt like I was rich. I was making $10,000 on top of free tuition. I'm like, that's the most I've ever heard of. Yeah. But, and then I jumped on it immediately, the Division III school. I was so excited for it. And I'm thinking, I'm telling people, yeah, this is how much you get for it. They're like, how are you living off of that? I'm like, I'm the one who's thinking I'm making a fortune over here. You know? But more power to you to be able to do that, to be able to balance that, and to be able to have a family, somebody to financially support as well. That's impressive. So how did those experiences, like those GA experiences, one, what were some of the things that they put you through to help you, one, get your feet moving, get your feet wet in the profession? What were some of the things that you had to go through? I'm sure a lot of them probably weren't glorifying things, but that's the root of it all. So what were some of the things that you had to do to be a part of that program and kind of work your tail off?
So I was considered a guard coach. So I was able to follow up behind Daryl Hudson. He was the lead guard coach at the time. He's really big into skill development. So whenever he was on the court, I was on the court, just kind of eyeing him and what he does and just picking up on things like that. Walter Pitts, he was over our recruiting at the time, so he would allow for me to do just different recruiting spreadsheets. I was in on meetings, staff meetings. So I was treated like a staff member in a sense. And just that first year, I didn't have scouting reports, but they would allow for me to assist with the scouting reports. So just the presentation part, cutting up film, drawing plays, just things like that. And I did a lot of, I guess you could say, graphic designing early on as well. So like different projects that Coach Reed would want for the program and different ideas that she had, I would be responsible for bringing that to life. But that was really good. And then going into that second year, I was given scouting reports as a graduate assistant, which I believe helped me. And it wasn't a thing where, okay, you have a scout report where you have a partner with. It was, this is your scout, this is your baby, you have to get the win. That was good for me as well, to just get my feet wet. And one thing I would say, Coach Reed, she did allow for me to do things that normal graduate assistants don't necessarily have the opportunity to do. So that was really good for me.
Yeah, no, that's, they did you such a solid, and by just throwing you into the deep end and then teaching you how to swim. But the beauty of that, though, is imagine how you felt that second year versus the first year. Like that first year, you probably just hanging onto the car bumper, trying to figure it all out. And then you come back that next year and they saw the confidence that you had gained. And so they reward you by letting you do more. It's like player development. Coaches need their own development too. So they put you in a space that allowed you to develop. Big credit to them for doing that.
And they were really open with it as well. I could just be walking by and I see them watching film. They call me the young one. Yo, come in here, come look at this. And just watching how they would watch film. We would go on, we would get swipes at Jackson State. So back then you would get swipes to the cafeteria. So we would go eat lunch and I would just watch how they would mingle and things like that. It was more working, but also just as much as I was working, I was watching. Just watching how they carried themselves and things that they were doing, just picking up on their tendencies as well.
Yeah. Now, something to be said for that. Sometimes you work, sometimes you watch, but watching helps you be a better worker.
Yeah, it does. It definitely does.
No, that's one thing that I got to say. It took me a little longer, but I started realizing, yeah, exactly what you said, watching and listening the way people talk, not necessarily the words coming out, but the way they frame them and the way they approach, talk to people. Are they more questions? Are they more statements? Like just little things. When you sit back and actually listen rather than having to input something all the time, you take a lot more away. So that's a great point. And then one thing I noticed, especially continuing with Jackson State and moving forward with it, one, you guys had an absolute hell of a career. Hell, I shouldn't even say career, hell of a couple of years, right? At one point, 95-10, two undefeated seasons in conference play. And that's just saying like the minimal, right? You blown it out of the water, both 22-23 seasons. We'll hype you up here a little bit. You had the Silver Media Top 75 Most Impactful Mid-Major Assistant Coaches. Is an absolute honor. So going from the GA role that you were to then being on the staff and then getting all of these accolades, seeing the success, they obviously helped groom you. And of course, your hard work definitely is being put into effect and it's obvious to see and great to be able to see that has all gone to fruition. What were some of the things like once you stepped into those, that assistant position and getting more responsibilities, did much change for you? Did it feel like anything was different or did it feel like it was just a continuous flow from the GA and into the next?
I think it was a smooth transition, but just having more responsibilities, right? So when you have more responsibilities, things go wrong, it could fall on you. As a graduate assistant, if something goes wrong with a task or assignment you're given, it's not necessarily your fault, it's the assistant coach that you're working with and things like that. Just transitioning and taking on more of those responsibilities came with more maturity as well. And that was even with the players, as far as the players. So not being in that graduate assistant role, now I'm an assistant coach, just still demanding that respect from them. We can keep these relationship, we can keep it going. But as I continue to grow, the level of respect has to continue to develop as well. So that was an easy transition for the players as well. And just being a recruiter, you always have those relationships with players. Just let them know, hey, we're on the court, we're on the court, we're on the court. So as a GA, you're not necessarily doing a lot of teaching, right? You're more going to the players in their ear, making sure they're good throughout practice. Now you're an assistant coach and you have those responsibilities. You become a vocal teacher in practice. Whereas I may be able to come over and give you a little pep talk because you made a bad play or things like that. Now I got to coach you as to why you can't make that bad play. So just having those differences, but it was definitely a smooth transition. And I think it helped because as I continued to transition through those roles, it was under the same head coach, but also Coach Richard Bradley. He was still on staff at the time. And then once he left staff, we brought in two really great coaches as well. And our coaching staff has always been really connected, family oriented, especially like the assistant coaches, because we're always together and we always have each other's back. So I've been blessed to really work with some real good assistant coaches as well to help support Coach Reed and her vision.
Yeah, no, that's where it all starts. The players feel it, right? They feel if you guys are connected, they feel it. Right. If you guys are on the same page, they know it. Their antennas are impeccable as far as picking up on. And I got to give females probably even a little bit more credit maybe than guys, because ladies catch everything. So sometimes guys, stuff will go right over our head, but females catch it all. But what, talk about just not just coaching in an HBCU, but for student athletes being at a HBCU, the advantage of that experience for them, because that's just something we've had coaches from HBCUs come on, and Coach Crary over at Grambling was on, and Kenny Blakeney from Howard, and they've all shared their thoughts about the HBCU experience for student athletes. What did you draw from that, that it's great for student athletes to have that experience?
It definitely is great for student athletes to have that HBCU experience. some of our players at Jackson State were transfers from the PWIs and the Power Five conferences, and just being able to bring them back to Jackson State and just to be able to experience the community, the family, just the homecoming. Homecoming was really big in Jackson. Jackson State homecoming is the city of Jackson's homecoming. You know, walk down and just see like tons of people on the plaza. Jackson State call it the plaza, and just being able to network with other entrepreneurs, like people that's in careers that you may want to go into, and just being able to have that connection and being able to relate. I think it was a really big experience for players, and it's just different. It's different. Some players, they thrive in smaller academic classroom situations. So that was a difference that I noticed as well with players, and just being able to just connect and have that experience was amazing for our players, just be looking from a coaching standpoint.
Yeah. No, I'm glad you said that. With so much traveling going on in college basketball, both the men's and women's side. But it seems like if you step foot into an HBCU, if you're there for a year, 4 years, 5 years, you're redshirted, whatever, you're a tiger, right? Jackson State Tigers. Like,
right.
You're a tiger for life.
Yeah, yeah.
No matter, yeah. Even if it's just for a year. But HBCUs have this embracing experience with alumni that I don't know that kids get that everywhere, especially with so much transferring going on.
And like you said, you're a tiger for life. Even when Coach Reed job at Charlotte, it wasn't any bad wishes, any ill will. It was congratulations to you guys. You guys did a great job at Jackson State. Constant text messages about them rooting for us here. So always having that community to go back to. And that was one thing about Jackson State as well. I think they had one of the largest alumni bases, regardless of HBCU and the smaller schools. They had, I think, 60 to 70,000 alumni bases. Yeah, it was a real big, really big community. And our players were able to thrive off of it. Even to this day, players returning, they're able to go up to Jackson State right now and still get the same treatment they would have as a student athlete.
Yeah, that's special. That's special.
Having the community behind you is huge. That's the one thing I got to say. Look, whether it's like a head coach, assistant, when you get people in the stands, and obviously winning helps that, but right. When you get a ton of people in the stands nonetheless, and there are all the excitement around it, that's just, you feel that. Once you walk into a gym, you can truly feel it. That's always something that you can't really – you can't describe it until you see it.
Yeah.
Those are great experiences. But that's what comes with it, especially it sounds like it was definitely helped because you guys were on a roll, as I said, 95-10. Isn't
we were.
The rich history definitely helps with that too, though. No, that's great. And then we'll fast forward a little bit to just now, right? Your staff over at UNC Charlotte, the experiences there. I know we were talking before you hopped on, and obviously Mage was mentioning too, like the foundation, the culture that is there. Just talk about transitioning from Jackson State to now UNC Charlotte, the experiences, what all you've got to learn now, getting a little bit more responsibility and being the associate head, and just that transition from one spot to the next and what you've learned.
Yeah, it was a really easy transition just because we had really good administrators. Our SWA was really good. Our athletic director at the time, he was really good and really just welcoming. But just coming into Charlotte and just seeing things the way they're done. So the difference between here and at Jackson State, we had maybe four people doing 20 different jobs, right? Here at Charlotte, you have a person for each specific job. Just learning how to navigate multiple people and not trying to do everything on your own because you're used to wearing multiple hats at an HBCU. So just everyone coming in, we came into Charlotte, everyone knew that Coach Reed was a winner. They knew, like you said, the 95-10, what it was, 5 SWAC regular season championships. They knew. And so it made it easier because they believed in Coach Reed's vision as well. So the community in Charlotte rallied behind us and just continuing to get the community involved. Like you said, playing in front of fans that really pump you. And we've had really good games here at Charlotte where we've came down to the wire and the fans were helping us get over that hump. especially this past season, Davidson game. Davidson is one of the biggest rivalry games for Charlotte. And I don't think in maybe 3-4 years, if I'm not mistaken, maybe 5. And we were able to win this year with a really good crowd. And they were just really involved. And once we won, we got the trophy. We got to celebrate that with the fans. That was a really great experience.
Now, let me ask this, because I know we're talking a lot on community and fans. Again, having the success definitely put butts in seats. Right. Was there something that like the staff had did to get more involved with the community or to get them to be more responsive to come to more? Or was it just like the success around it? Was there anything that the coaches did to really be more involved with the fans and the community?
I know this past summer we did a free clinic in the community as well. So in the community of Gastonia, we just came and did a clinic for them. Coach Rita is really big on community service as well. So we did a lot of community service during the summertime. Just going out, talking to the districts was really helpful as well. Coach Reed was a speaker in school district with the leaders in the school district. So that was really good as well. But we just like to get out in the community. And it helps also when you're able to recruit players that's from the area. So we were able to bring back our starting point guard this year, Tanasia Hayes. She's from Charlotte, which was really good. She was able to help that as well. And she had her best games at home. And you could tell it was that Charlotte pride in her. So being able to just get out in the community, give back because we're blessed and fortunate, but everyone else is not always as fortunate as us. So just giving back in ways that we couldn't even imagine has helped as well.
That you guys probably still do it. One day I know the fans were, or the seats were really full, was the public school day, or like the school day where the school kids show up.
Yeah.
That day in particular, this just constant, you can always tell from what's going on, because it's just constant screaming, you know, literally for 2 hours while the game's going on. They're rooting for both teams. They don't know when the ball goes in or doesn't go in. They're just going nuts. But I'm glad you said that about community service, because there's two mindsets with that. And young coaches, I hope, listen to this. You're going to be a head coach at some point. And so you've already, I think, embraced it. And when you're at a place that obviously like Jackson State, like you are, whether you like it or not, you're going to be deep in that community. That's just the way it is.
Right.
But there's two schools of thought on it. And sometimes I think coaches can miss it because they'll say, yeah, let's do community service, like checking a box, as opposed to what does it look like for us to serve the community? That's the difference, right? Like community service can be like, oh yeah, we passed out turkeys at Thanksgiving and Christmas and hey, all right, see y'all next year. Or is it something ongoing? Boys and Girls Club kids coming and being ball boys and ball girls at games, right? Like you said, the free clinic in the community, doing things with the local school district. That to me is the difference between community service and serving the community. You guys have probably been in touch with, if you haven't, he's going to be in touch with you, is the guy that runs Samaritan's Feet, Manny Onomi.
Yes.
And Manny is phenomenal, right? And he took our team into a really tough part, disadvantaged part of Charlotte, and did one of his shoe projects. So we had a bunch of shoes, and the players sit down across from someone, and you literally wash their feet before you give them a new pair of shoes. My point to the fellas, guys, you get new pairs of shoes each year. You got 4 in your locker. You ain't even opening the box yet.
Right.
Like, this pair of shoes may be the one pair people get for a year. And so it's little things like that. And I love that you mentioned that, because I think young coaches can pull a nugget from that when they get their opportunity, either as an assistant or as a head coach, is serve the community. Don't just do community service like checking a box.
Right. And that's something that's big with Coach Reed. She's big into community service. And we've seen where a lot of community service projects we've done this year has really not only impacted the community, but it's impacted our players as well. They've been able to really just pour and give back to people that need them. And it's helped change their lives as well. They've realized that they have been blessed with opportunity. And so it's been really good, really good.
Yeah. Love it. Love it.
Yeah. And once you realize you're blessed like that, once you realize you have a good opportunity, and then on top of that, you see somebody that you just helped out give a pair of shoes a week ago, and now they're sitting front row in your seats. We, Mage, you mentioned having like the all the middle schools and high schools and all that local schools come to the games. We had that for just a small Division III program. We had a couple middle schools sitting right behind our bench. Those kids, our guys would walk past the bench because they were screaming. Now, they were screaming some crazy stuff for middle school kids, I have to say. But they were screaming, and you could tell their enjoyment, and they've started doing it. They come back at least once a year, maybe more. But those are the kids that fill our camps. Those are the kids that fill our camps. Yes. Those are the kids that come back consistently. They're in our games. So that's the one thing is getting the community, getting more people involved. You can benefit off of it, and they can benefit off of it, and it can ultimately become a tradition for some of those kids.
Yeah, for sure. I think some of them are just screaming because they're not in school. They're that happy.
With this year, the whole 6-7 thing, and they standing up, signs, it was crazy.
Yeah. No, that's great. One thing I want to make sure to ask, too, and really just if you have any advice. You've, as we mentioned, worked from a GA position, and then we'll get into a hot seat segment here in a second, but just any advice that you may have from working from the GA to now being an associate head coach. You've seen the middle ground, you've worked your way up the chain, and you're still a young coach in the industry. Is there any advice that maybe you have for people who are starting in those GA positions that you would share back?
Yeah, I would just tell them to just continue to work and put their head down. There's no job that's too little. Always be available for the head coach first, the assistant coaches. And just be a sponge, learn as much as you can learn. And even though things may not, you may have some rocky times, some hard times, just keep fighting, don't give up. Because the moment that you give up and you think, hey, this is not for me, that's the moment you could be coming through your breakthrough. Just continue to work, be a sponge, learn as much as you can, and be a Swiss Army knife.
There you go. I like that.
Nice. The Swiss Army knife. That was perfect. So as I mentioned, we'll get into the hot seat segment. It's just one or two quick questions, really just to throw something out there, change it up a little bit. Number one, what you feel is the most underrated skill in coaching? If there was something that people maybe should develop as a young coach, or any underrated skill that you feel coaches should probably develop more?
I would say the most underrated skill that coaches may have, or well, need to develop more, maybe just the analytics part. This is something that's becoming big in the game of basketball, and we're relying on trying to merge sports analytics department. But if coaches can navigate the analytic part themselves, it would also help understand the analytics better, because we're hiring analytic people on staff and getting that information about, are we really understanding the information that they're giving us, especially with the way the game is going towards. So just that analytic part, being able to understand that information.
Yeah.
No, that's great. Especially because analytics, depending on the, I guess, your head coach, like a lot of people use analytics for certain things, where the best shot quality is. We were going over, Mage, we were talking about the four, if you break down the paint into four segments and which ones you get higher priority. You remember talking about, I forget, that was a little while ago.
Paint touch levels.
Yeah.
That was really, yeah.
Paint touch levels and going over all that. That was absolutely. And then not only that, like the higher quality, the higher up in the paint you get, the percentage of shot opportunities you get, the opportunities, the percentages of your best shooter, where does he shoot best at, from the corners, maybe from the top. So analytics are huge. And I feel like people don't use them maybe enough, but there's so many of them. That's the thing.
Yes.
And then we'll go to the second one, being the hardest part of recruiting you feel in today's landscape.
I think the hardest part is just trying to communicate through players, through their agents. Back before the whole rev share and deals like that, you could easily get on the phone with a recruit. You may have to talk to mom, dad, you coach, but now essentially you may not get the recruit's contact until you can work out some things or put some things on the table with the agent. So that's been the hardest, I'd say the most difficult, different thing that's going on right now. It's just you have that middleman now. And it wasn't like this a few years ago, not when I got into the game. And I know it wasn't, Coach, when you were the head coach here on the men's side, but it's different now. It's really different. So we're just having to navigate and adjust.
Yeah, and try to get to the truth.
Right, because the agent can tell you one thing, but the player wants something different, but you just have to discern what is right, what is wrong, what is truth.
Yeah. Or the player may not want something different, and the agent wants something.
Want something different, right.
So it's sometimes the players got a pureness of heart, and it's the middle person that you got to wonder about. Yeah. So it's you're trying to speed date with quality with recruiting right now, especially when it comes to the portal. That's a great answer. Great answer.
The portal is crazy. That's a whole other rabbit hole we would open up. But man, I was messing around on it yesterday, just reaching out to some people and refreshed it after 10 minutes, another 15 to like the whole page just completely moved down. I'm like, this is just unbearable. It's ridiculous. It really is. But
got over 2,500 last year, I think was the highest it's been up to this point.
It's crazy. But that's a whole other topic for a whole other time.
Yeah, let's put the lid back on that for now. We'll get back to that later.
No, but Coach Cousin, we appreciate you for being on here. I don't know if there's anything else you or Mage, anything else anybody has to share, but we really, as I mentioned, whether it's season, out of season, and of course right now, as we mentioned, the portal time and where a lot of things are going to get hectic with the recruiting and postseason wrap up, there's a lot of things to be able to juggle. So to be able to take some of your time, we do appreciate you hopping on here with us.
No, I appreciate you guys for having me. And when I got the email, it was like a no-brainer. Let's make this happen. So,
well, we appreciate it. Thank you again. Go Niners.
Go Niners.
And we appreciate all of you for being on here and listening to us. As always, your hosts, Alan Major, Doug Caputo, keep working. Coaches, keep rising. Good luck out there in the portal. Keep navigating. Hopefully somebody can land some good fish in there. We'll talk to you all soon.
Coach, are you still hanging on to that old shooting machine that's just sitting in storage and not getting used at all? Our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball are here to help trade in your machine any make, any model, in any condition, even if it's from a competitor. Plus, you get free shipping on your purchase of a brand new Dr. Dish.
I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.